the Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Stephen Ross, who is the co-founder and CEO of World Research Foundation. On the 5th of August, we had discussed his book, And Nothing Happened, But You Can Make It Happen, which is a story of a number of suppressed medical technologies that probably would have changed the world had they not been suppressed. And we didn't quite make it through the book, so we're back again to start up. We're going to talk a little bit about color therapy and a machine that he actually has these machines in his World Research Foundation, not only the machines, but all the materials that go with them in terms of the studies that have been done and the results of the clinical research. So he can tell us what these machines did and how they were suppressed and why these machines, which mostly use frequency, various forms of frequency, anywhere from the right frequencies, which are more vibrational, to color, and then to higher frequencies. These are all suppressed because basically certain companies can't make a lot of money on them. So welcome back, Dr. Ross.
Thank you so much, Susan. I appreciate you having me back on your show.
Well, we had gotten up to the spectrochrome system, which was, you want to tell us a little bit about how that was developed and
sure.
what the usage was in the United States earlier in the century.
Yes, the spectrochrome system is the use of the visible light spectrum, and it was developed by Dinshaw Gadiali, who was from India. It's very interesting because when we look at the color therapy, we see references dating all the way back to Pythagoras and his use of color around 525 BC. So the use of color is not anything new. Now, mm-hmm. Dinshaw in India in the late 1800s was very, very excited about color when he learned about it from a book called The Principles of Light and Color by Dr. Edwin Babbitt. Now, Babbitt did not have a full 12-color system, but a 6-color system, and it was Dinshaw who elaborated upon this and developed a 12-color system of healing. Now, what's really fascinating to me is that Dinshaw was basically a yogi and had originally incorporated a lot of yogic principles into this. However, what Dinshaw developed was really a scientific system, again, of using color, a 12-color system that addressed more than 350 different diseases and illnesses. He came to the United States in the early 1920s, started teaching classes of color, and eventually had more than 500 U.S. doctors using color therapy in the early 1920s.
And in 1920, there wasn't, we didn't have the pharmaceutical range that we have now.
Exactly.
Right. So when was penicillin out? Do you remember?
Not offhand, but I would think even with the advent of penicillin, the pharmaceutical industry did not have the strength that it did. But interesting, if you look at what Dinshaw said along with the color, he said milk and dairy products causes mucus, meat mm-hmm. is not good for the body, and smoking can cause cancer. So Susan, right. He immediately had all those industries against him in the early 1920s. So he was really battling a lot of resistance.
Yeah. Well, that's even true today. People
absolutely.
That speak out against the milk or meat industry.
Right.
Just ask Oprah.
Right. And again, he was a very interesting individual because he was quite dramatic in his presentation. He died in the 1970s, but I've been in touch with Dinsha's son, who is also in his 90s, and he told me that before each class with the doctors, his dad would do a couple of exhibitions. One of them was he would have his eyes taped closed and a bandana over his eyes, and he would ride a bicycle through the streets of New York.
Oh, my goodness.
He would also have any doctor put a book behind his knee, and he would read the book. And then he figured once he got these doctors' attention, he would start lecturing on color therapy.
Oh,
so,
my goodness. Yeah.
I know. It is quite dramatic. And even his son, Darius, says, yes, my father was quite the showman when it came to that. However, he was quite the scientist when it came mm-hmm. to the use of color therapy.
Now, do you have the spectrochrome system in your collection?
Yes. In fact, there's a wonderful book called Let There Be Light that is actually written by Dinsha's son. So Darius Dinsha wrote this book, Let There Be Light, and mm-hmm. it gives you the exact colors to use for, again, more than 350 diseases and illnesses. Now, we started off kind of dramatically here with talking about riding a bike blindfolded and reading a book which was placed behind the knee. But mm-hmm. I don't want to detract from how heavily the doctors who were using this therapy, the spectrochrome system, believed in it, because Dinsha was tried in front of the New Jersey Supreme Court, where they actually tried whether color was real or not. And after 2 hours, the jury ruled that no, color is effective. And the reason was two doctors, Dr. Kate Baldwin, who was the senior surgeon at Philadelphia Women's Hospital, swore under oath that she had cured cataracts, glaucoma, bronchitis, pleurisy, asthma, kidney conditions, syphilis, and also cancer mm-hmm. using the spectrochrome system. But it was Dr. Martha Peoples, who was another witness for Dinsha, who was the head of the Department of Health of the City of New York and also a physician for the American Expeditionary Forces in World War I. Both of them swore under oath that they had used this, and Dr. Peoples had claimed she had worked with cancer, arthritis, poliomyelitis, all successfully. So when the defense rested, the jury took 90 minutes and ruled in favor of Dinsha and color. However, the authorities, the FDA and AMA, wouldn't stop there. So they then took Dinsha to court for practicing medicine without a U.S. license, mm-hmm. and then he was thrown in jail over and over again right. for not having an American license.
Yeah, they like to use that one.
That is probably where it really started with him back in the, again, in the very early 1930s. We have used color, again, I want you to understand my wording here. I have witnessed and demonstrated the use of color on more than 500 people and animals over the mm-hmm. last 45 years. So, of course, I wouldn't think of treating people without a license. I have just seen it demonstrated, and it is mm-hmm. highly effective over the years. And I mentioned this a little on your last show. In
right.
the history of medicine, you've never heard that anyone OD'd from color therapy. If mm-hmm. color, if you do not have the right color, nothing happens. And you could think of color therapy like this. What happens when you have a glass full of water and you put more water into it? You don't break the glass, it just spills over. So color therapy works about within an hour a day. And again, it has proved effective. And let's remember what is used for children with yellow jaundice, bilirubin, infant liver syndrome. They are put under a blue light. That's color therapy.
Right. Yeah, I was an RH baby and born 5 weeks early and was really, really ill. And they told my mom I was going to die at least 3 times in the first 2 weeks of life. And they took me to University of Maryland and gave me a total body transfusion, which at the time was experimental, and told my mom I'd be mentally retarded because of the kernicterus. I don't know if they used light therapy on me or not. I'm not sure they had it in 54. And then when I went to University of Maryland, I was met by this doctor who said, I know you're not coming here because I see all these Ivy League schools you got into, but I'm the pediatrician that saved your life.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Well, I bet the spiritual guides had a lot of trouble, had a lot of fun setting that one up.
For sure. No, because if you think of the likelihood that you would meet somebody who was in
that
position,
much longer.
I think it's very
weird. Yeah.
Wow. No, so again, I would think that even today you can read children who have that yellow jaundice.
They are put
under a blue light, yes, and the ones that don't have almost 100% totality. So this is kind of a thing where I don't like doctors cherry-picking because it is blue, it is a color, it is projected over the body, not injected, and yet it causes physiological changes. So one should not think that the color used, and there are very specific colors for each problem. What the color is doing is altering the physiology of the body, bringing the body back to a balance point, and then the body is healing itself.
Yeah, for example, orange treats asthma but will make cancer grow. So there's certain colors you shouldn't use with some diseases.
Well, again, there's colors that enhance, build up. And it's interesting because in the book, Let There Be Light, not only are the 354 diseases and illnesses listed, but attributes of color are listed. Red is a stimulant for the sensory nervous. Yellow stimulates the motor nervous system. Green is a pituitary stimulant. Blue relieves itching. And I might say that a woman, Susan McDonald, back in the 80s, did a double-blind study, if I recall, on 60 patients with rheumatoid arthritis, 60 female patients. She put their elbows in a box where they could not see what color was being used on them. And what she discovered was the blue color used for 30 minutes rectified the pain and the swelling in just 30 minutes of patients using a particular blue color. When they used other colors, you know, there was no change. So the colors used are against the balance of the system. And if we use the other colors, they are not going to be balancing the system in the same manner. They may be driving the body harder. They might be increasing the circulation. So it is a fine art, but it was perfected by Dinshaw and the spectrochrome. Now, in 1926, the AMA came out and basically in the AMA journal said any doctor using color would lose their license, and thus color virtually disappeared out of the medical repertoire.
Yeah, I treated a lot of, I covered 6 emergency rooms, so I did a lot of car accidents, and patients would come in dressed in blue, because of course blue is what they would subconsciously pick because they were in pain. And then my patients who were anemic would dress in red, because red will help raise the blood. So even what they choose to wear is like lavender will heal nerves, green is just good overall for healing. And,
absolutely.
Right. And so.
And Susan, I like what you mentioned with the red, because when you look at this spectrochrome theory, red mm-hmm. builds platelets and the hemoglobin. So that is perfect. I mean, that is absolutely perfect. Green is the great balancer.
Right.
And again, what we have in our foundation is we have the records of this almost 500 medical doctors, what conditions they were working with, what the results were. So this is not hypothetical. It's not wishful thinking. There's mm-hmm. a lot more to it. And by the way, the spectrochrome is just the use of the visible light spectrum. Running
right, yeah.
a 60-watt bulb through Roscaline gel filters mm-hmm. against the body for 45 minutes to an hour. So I like what you said earlier. Therapy is like 6 cents an hour, so there's not a lot of money in it. That's why it's not in use.
So could patients order their own systems, color systems?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they could go on to Amazon, they could contact our foundation if they desire to get this book, Let There Be Light, and it mm-hmm. spells out the exact colors, and it has a little chart of the physical body, so an individual would be able to know what colors to use, where to place it on the body, where to buy filters, and you can use a slide projector. Somebody can use a regular light and just hook up a very simple device in front of it and just put filters in and out. I believe there's a company called Products on Demand, and they're not affiliated with me in any way, but if you go to Products on Demand, they actually provide the 12 color slides plus a little slide projector. And mm-hmm. it's been a little bit, but time, I believe it's something like $90, and you get the whole system.
You know, I'm thinking somebody could do an app as well. You know, you have those flashlight apps on your iPhone?
Yes, if you can get, there are so many possibilities. What I like about Dinshaw's system, he called it a perfectly attuned system, which meant, yes, green is green, but there's a lot of variations of green, of
right.
red, of yellow. His system had, as an example, if you take the red spectrum, if he was using the red directly in the middle, he would also use directly in the middle the orange, the yellow, the blue. So mm-hmm. it's perfectly attuned. And his early machines use special cut glass from Germany, and he ran the colors through this glass device, the spectrochrome device.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he was thrown in jail, his device was banned, and now people use the gelatin filters that are regular stage light filters, but they mm-hmm. are a very, very specific frequency.
Well, that's something for people to think about, because it is really true that blue light treats pain. And,
absolutely.
It means that it also helps muscle spasm, and it'll, help probably healing in general in terms of many conditions.
Yeah.
And I know that wounds respond to color therapy.
In fact, the wound very much, but I like what you were talking about earlier regarding what colors the patients pick, because green is the great balancer of mm-hmm. the spectrochrome system. It really brings the body down. A little sidelight that has nothing to do exactly with the spectrochrome system, but everything to do with color, and that is, I remember seeing a documentary about the color pink. Now, researchers mm-hmm. went into a weight room, and they had a placard with a particular color pink. They held it up in front of the weightlifters, 6 inches from their eyes, and the weightlifters could not even lift the weight.
That's interesting, isn't it?
And a little fun thing about this is a couple of universities painted the visiting locker room pink color. So when the opposing football teams would come into their stadium during halftime, they would be subjected, I know I'm laughing, to this pink color. And after 20 minutes, they were so lethargic, it took them part of the third quarter to get their stability back.
Well, I've got a funny story about the room I'm in now. I'm actually in our 23-hour room where we had patients stay overnight. And I had picked out a border and then kind of a wallpaper that matched the border that was kind of pinkish with swirls in it. It was really pretty. But the only problem is that when you walked in the room, you got nauseated. So I had to paint over the wallpaper, so now the walls are white. But it's hilarious. I mean, I couldn't believe that that caused nausea, but it did. And, of course, you can't have that right after surgery.
Right. Well, and it shows you directly. And, again, you are in the wonderful position of a foot in both worlds, and that is you are classically trained. You work in that field, but you know the value and importance of many of these, oh my gosh, non-traditional techniques you and I spoke about, the acupuncture, the Reiki, and you are really the optimum type practitioner who, when there are times when we need to have surgery, we need to have classical approaches, but then again, there's many times when we don't need to start there, and we can at least look. But when those two doctors in the 20s swore under oath of the therapies they treated, hey, they had credentials, they had their life profession really in the balance, and they swore under oath that the color, the spectrochrome system, had effectively addressed those health problems.
And I had interviewed Richard Gerber, Dr. Gerber, who wrote Vibrational Medicine on multiple occasions.
Actually,
he was great. He said he was envious of me because I could actually practice what I was studying. He was actually in an internal medicine practice and was quite limited in what he could do. But he was a brilliant man, as you know. And he taught us that vibrational medicine is really like octaves on a piano. You know, down here in the vibrational range, you might have the right frequencies, but then way up at the higher ranges, it's still an octave of frequency, but it's a much higher frequency, and that might be some of your, you know, your Reiki or your, you know, high-level ultraviolet stuff or, you know, infrared stuff. But anyway, the whole spectrum goes all the way up to scalar energy. But it is it is an octave. You know, each octave has a like low frequency to very high frequency, and then probably scalar is even outside of electromagnetic completely. But the whole idea is that if you combine them, this is what I'd like to do, combine the frequencies. You know, use the vibrational, use the Reiki, use the, you know, the color therapy, use all, the sound therapy. There's a huge thing with sound therapy. And use them all at once. That's really where you get the results.
Yes, and there are some people who have built special beds that incorporate this with patients will lay down on a bed with particular gemstones located at the chakras with music and color. I would like to go back to Richard Gerber. Every time he came to the L.A. area, he was taking some courses at UCLA, we would meet and have dinner. And I'm glad that you added, because he when we first met, and this was right before he wrote the book, he was saying that the other doctors, his partners, would really not like this. However, a little fun thing, if you're able to get the first edition of his book, Vibrational Medicine, and go all the way to the back, you will see that he wrote two paragraphs on World Research Foundation and how he desired to set up an entire healing clinic using these techniques that he could not use in his own practice. That was his name, the first and second edition. So I am very familiar with him. His book is a wonderful explanatory guide to many of these things you and I are talking about.
Yeah, he makes it really understandable and then compares. You can actually see how all of vibrational medicine is one big spectrum. That's what I liked about it. He really had the big picture.
Well, I like it because there's an old book called The Kybalion, Hermetic Philosophy, that says all of this is exactly the same substance, but different in degree. And that is the electromagnetic spectrum. It is incredible, the various practices you and I have spoken about, that they're all energy, and they just fall, again, at a different spectrum. But or a different degree, but it's all energy. It's always
it is.
Energy.
Now, in Chapter 5, you talk about the multiple wave oscillator. Would you like to talk about that's a therapeutic machine that the books were The Secret of Life and The Waves That Heal. Would you like to tell the listeners about that?
Yes. The multiple wave oscillator was the device that was built by a man named George Lakowski. And George Lakowski was residing in France when he developed this special machine. Now, the multiple wave oscillator is exactly that. It puts out multiple frequencies. Lakowski had a device that looked like a regular antenna with multiple bands on this antenna. Each one of those bands emitted a different frequency, and what Lakowski said was the body, every cell, the different organs are all oscillating at particular frequencies. Lakowski claimed that he found each one of these frequencies, and his device put out, again, one after another, the various frequencies that was the healthy state of the cells, tissues, and organs. Now, that is a pretty big claim, but what he was able to do with his multiple wave oscillator was demonstrate that this device did not destroy virus or bacteria or pathogen, but it allowed the cells to hear their correct frequency, to begin pulsating back at that level, and then as the cells are healthy and their frequency was stronger than the frequency of these invading organisms, the body went back into balance. Now, what is interesting was Lakowski did prove his point with cancer and other diseases, and I was able to obtain records from hospitals in Italy and France and Germany back in the 1930s, where they stated that this machine was miraculous in that it was able to address these various problems and address them effectively. Now, the multiple wave oscillator would have had a lot more information about it. However, when the Germans invaded France, Lakowski migrated to the United States. He went to a hospital in New York and immediately started cleaning out the hospital bed of a lot of different problems. However, 2 years after that, he had an accident in the crosswalk leading to the hospital. He was run over. I have used the multiwave oscillator, not his exact model, but similar one, and I have seen it work on more than 300 people with problems of cancer, arthritis, Lou Gehrig's disease, which there is really nothing for. It is a very unusual, interesting healing device. And what is fascinating about this, Susan, is the right device, the destroyed viruses and bacteria, literally exploding them when Rife had the mortal oscillatory rate. Now, Lukosky's theory was a little bit different. He believed that you could take these cells, and once you play the correct frequency for them, they would strive to reach that new frequency being put out by the antenna of the multiple wave. And rather than destroying or killing anything, they would go back to a healthy state, a frequency higher than the invading organism, and therefore the body would be back in balance. I don't think there's any question. People who are in this field know that everybody has the potentiality of cancer and other problems in the body. You don't just get this. It's all the potentiality is already there. So if you stay healthy, if you keep your vibratory level high, higher than the invading organism's frequency, you are going to be healthy. If your cells drop down, the invader's and I'm trying to use this analogy, I hope it's okay, the invading frequency is higher, and it really overcomes the defense mechanism and the cells, and that's when you have a problem. So Rife destroyed them. The multiple-wave oscillator believed in enhancing the body.
Now, I want to give an example for the listening audience. Like whenever I do healing on someone, I usually get why they got sick. And so this patient came in with a sore throat, and I was just, you know, running my hand over the throat. And then I saw that they had had a fight with their boyfriend, and but had not said anything, you know, had held back.
Yes.
And that holding back, when you really should speak what you need to speak, lowers the energy in the throat, and then she got a viral infection.
Perfect. That's just, and I love when we get more into the aspect of how our minds and belief systems affect us. That is a wonderful example.
Yeah, it's really lowering of the energy. And we talked earlier on the show, we did a couple of days ago, about how cancer comes into an area of low energy, actually an organ of low energy. You know, the lymphatic system is lymphoma, the blood would be leukemia, but then each organ can get cancer. So it's lowering of the organ energy with infection and all sorts of different infectious agents, radiation, geopathic stress, which would lower the energy of the entire body, and then toxic chemical or electromagnetic, especially nowadays with all of the electromagnetic challenges we have, and or anything. We talked about dental, the root canal on the breast meridian, or I saw a cancer patient this week, and she'd had a tummy tuck, and she had a squamous cell of the gut that went away. But then it was the area of the tummy tuck with the cut across the meridians there. So that was low energy where the recurrent cancer happened. And there was a parasite in that area. So I think I mentioned that before. So we have the parasite, the meridian being cut across, and the original tumor went away. I mean, it was in the gut and it went away. It was no longer, they didn't even know where it came from.
Yeah.
So, low energy areas get cancer.
Well, I'm so sorry to talk over you. I apologize. I was going to mention a fun little tidbit here, and that is when we're talking about frequency and energies, and people have won Nobel Prizes for the frequency and vibration, what's coming out of cells, but in 1956, a book was written called The Changing Universe, and the author of it was a man named John Pfeiffer. And in that book, I read that he stated, "We are all a living broadcasting station." He said, "Our stomach wall sends out not only infrared heat waves, but the entire spectrum of ultraviolet, X-rays, and radio waves." He ended by saying, "The 50-foot aerial tower of the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington the most accurately constructed aerial at the time, could pick up the radio signals coming from a person's stomach, Susan, 4 miles away.
My goodness.
That was 1956. That antenna could pick up the frequency from one person's stomach 4 miles away. So these are just reiterations of what you and I and many people are already aware of about energy, about oscillation, about vibration. And the body, again, the cells with this frequency. This example I've given of Pfeiffer's quote is in that fifth chapter about the multiwave oscillator, because Harold Saxton Burr of Yale University, George Kreil of the Cleveland Clinic, Roy O'Reilly, all would have agreed completely with what Lakosky was doing and his multiple wave, because all of them were working, again, in the same basic area.
Yeah, so his machine was actually putting energy in to tissue that was lower in energy and bringing
exactly.
it up and throwing disease off, which is kind of the idea behind the quantum light generator that we're using here.
Yes. I would say, because, again, I've written a couple discussions on this, whether it is better to destroy or support, where I compared the Roy O'Reilly approach with the multiwave oscillator. And again, I would always look where you are enhancing, supporting, bolstering. Of course, I think very highly of Wright, and having had all of the materials of Wright, but I don't discount other devices and machines that, again, are effective. The multiwave oscillator was a device that, and is a device when people are able to get these, that is always worth trying, because I believe that if a fly lands on a table, we could use a wrecking ball that knocks down buildings. We're going to get the fly, but we're going to destroy the table. We can use a bowling ball. We're going to get that fly if we're fast, but we're going to destroy the table. Or we can use a fly swatter. I prefer, and I know you are from everything you've shared, you start with the fly swatter first. You don't start with the wrecking ball first,
right?
Because you got nowhere to go after that.
And probably the logical thing is when things are very, very, when people are very, very sick, you know, when they have advanced cancer, when they have serious infection and impending gangrene, it would be good to use something like Rife first to really knock the organism out, and then
correct.
Follow it by the other. I think the two-step approach is important because there is something to be said about, you know, I'm a surgeon. I mean, draining pus, there's nothing quite like draining an abscess, you know. I mean, people are better within hours. You know,
well,
somebody systemically ill, you know, I mean,
right.
ready to go into septic shock, you drain the abscess and they feel pretty good, you know, just an hour or two after surgery.
Well, so. This is why I ascribe to the belief that you make the call at the time. No one thing works for everybody. And I can tell you right now, I believe very heavily in color, but you can be in color with a tumor. It's going to take 150 years for that tumor to reduce. But if you use electromagnetics, if you use the multiple wave, which, by the way, the multiple wave accelerates healing at a very rapid pace, far beyond normal, much the same as another machine called the Diafolk did, you have to use what's needed. If you have a growth blocking arteries, color is just not
the
right
thing
to use.
You don't have time for color.
That's
or a tumor, you know, compress a nerve in the back.
That's right. So people have to use common sense on this. By the way, also in 1928, the New York Times on April 4th, 1928, ran an article about the multiple wave oscillator. Treats cancer cells using electrical waves. There is a whole article. So It was known, but of course, Susan, in those days, there was no internet. And a lot of these people like Rife and Burr and Lacoste really disappeared. Nobody knew. If the internet had been around during their time, 20 million mm-hmm. people could have known about it, and it wouldn't have disappeared so easy. So that's yeah. why a lot of these have not been heard from.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Dr. Harold Saxton Burr. He was a professor emeritus, Yale University School of Medicine, and he discovered electrodynamic fields.
Yes. And Dr. Burr had tremendous potential at Yale University. Excuse me. And what he discovered was there was a change in electrical potential at different parts of the body when, let's say, a cancer tumor would be growing. But this electrical potential would show up days or weeks before there was any evidence of a tumor.
Right.
And he was able to discover what he called L fields, or the L fields of life, which holds not only the body in place, but when any growth or substance was taking place, there would be these electrical changes in the body. And what he was very much known for was, and again, this was an offshoot and not his regular experimentation, he was able to determine when would be the best time that a woman would become pregnant. This really started as a result of the work that Harold Saxton Burr did. Also, when an egg was being formed, he was able to determine the exact, whether it would be a male or female. So I'm kind of jumping just a little bit, but I want to show a little bit more of his credibility, because it was his discoveries during female menstrual cycles, the changes in voltages, that was able to prove almost 100% effective when a woman could become pregnant. Now we jump back to his other work, and he could determine the exact spot on the body that a cancer tumor would form.
Mm-hmm.
And again, days or weeks before there was any visible evidence, even chemical evidence, that there was going to be a change in those cells. He had 102 cases where he checked the voltage gradient of patients. And he worked with another doctor who at New York University, Dr. Lewis Langman. And they were able to check with these patients whether a patient was going to have cancer when they did a intervention or whether they were not. And mm-hmm. this was generated through biopsies and cells that were released from the body. So the importance of Dr. Burr was that he really drove home this whole concept of the importance of changes of voltage and readings within the physical body. Mm-hmm. Again, you're talking about Yale University School of Medicine. He experimented for more than 50 years, and he really validated this concept. We know that all the cells change in the body. What keeps the shape of the body? If all our cells are constantly changing, how does everything hold its form? It is because mm-hmm. of these special L fields that exist and are measurable with voltmeters.
And, you know, if they had done a little bit more research, they would have been able to manipulate these L fields so that malignant
That's right.
fields would have been able to have been turned back to non-malignant.
You're exactly right, but this is where we can actually tie in some other researchers who were around the same areas, but again, Burr and the years that he was working also was so early. We're talking about back in the 1940s and 1950s. This was really foreign to most of the doctors and most of the scientists. And again, the physicists didn't always like when the doctor stepped into their field, and the physicists loved doing their research. They just didn't work enough with each other, because if they did, oh, my gosh, we would have been worlds ahead and really have been helping people. When you look at this whole aspect of cancer and the cancer growth, we have Dr. Nordenstrom, the former chairman of the Nobel Assembly, that was demonstrating that as the cancer tumors are growing, there's a change in the electrical potential. He would stick a tube inside the tumor and change the electrical field, and the tumors would shrink and disappear. That's really great.
If you turn the nucleus negative, that happens.
Yes. But can you imagine if he would have been working, and he was doing this in the 80s, what if he had been working 30 years earlier, taking what we know Burr and was doing at his time, we would have been much further advanced. But again, these things have not completely disappeared. My book is really to inform people about what they did. And thank goodness there are people and machines that have understood what these researchers did, and they're applying them in different ways.
So the next chapter is about Dr. Crile, George Crile.
Yes, Dr. Crile was one of the founders of the Cleveland Clinic, and why I put him in here and mentioned his research titled The Phenomena of Life. He was a fascinating individual because he is known for his work with surgical shock, so much so that a crater is named after him on the moon, and a U.S. battleship was named after him because of his work with surgical shock. However, few people know that he did work in what is going on with the cell, what is taking place in the radioelectric aspect of cells. And George Crile came up with his radioelectric theory of how all the body functions and are controlled and regulated electromagnetically. Mm-hmm. And he came upon this because one of his students that he went to medical school with died in an accident, and there was not that much blood loss, and nobody could figure out why his schoolmate died. And he couldn't figure it out because of everything he was taught in school. His schoolmate should have still been alive. And so this led him to spend more than 60 years researching. It has to do with the electrical potential of cells. Now, I know we have a theme going here over and over, but what makes Crile unique, and I realize we're getting short on time here, but I want to say that Crile discovered there were particular cells located within the body. These cells are different than any other cell. These special cells, which he called radiogens, take solar energy from the sun and redistribute it to all the other cells in the body. Now, this is kind of sad to get into this with just a few moments here, but he found that these particular little cells generate more heat than any other cells in the body, and they are like miniature nuclear reactors. and he discovered and found them. He said they're like billions of tiny suns that exist in the nucleus of these cells. And these cells, when they are damaged or lost, it causes the entire life activity in the body to start decaying and disappearing. So perhaps at another time we can get into a little bit more detail, but his radiogen and what he discovered and proved, why this has never been picked up, that these are cells that are different. They're found in the adrenal gland, the liver, and the thyroid, and he did a lot of work with them.
So this friend of his that had the accident, he yes. was hypothesizing that something happened to these cells during the accident, and that then...
Well, what he was hypothesizing was that he didn't know at that time why his friend Lindemann had died.
Mm-hmm.
He began researching everything he could on why would my friend have died when standard medicine would say there was no reason.
Right.
And it was the shock that this shock can affect these unique cells. And when they get affected, then you have a chain reaction that takes mm-hmm. place in the body. So Lindemann was really the cause, was really the impetus of a lifetime of research by Kreil. Mm-hmm. And he would write three books, The Bipolar Theory of the Living Process and The Theory of Life, which virtually the books I have that he wrote in the 30s are brand new. Nobody read them. Everybody was reading Kreil's books on surgical shock, and mm-hmm. his greater research was left unread.
Wow. Well, you know, we're going to have to do another interview because we're not through the book yet, and I'm sure you have some other other things that you can talk about that aren't in the book. So we'll set up another interview.
Susan, again, I want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share with your listeners. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm sure they really appreciate it. And remember to visit his website, look up the World Research Foundation. Stephen, if you'll give your website information.
Yes, that is wrf.org. So it stands for World Research Foundation, but it's wrf.org, and our main number there is 928-284-3300.
And just to remind the listeners, we're talking about Dr. Stephen Ross's book, And Nothing Happened, But You Can Make It Happen. These technologies are explained in the book. We have not made it through the end of the book, and so we'll be back on with the remainder of the book, and then I'm sure Stephen will pick out some other things that he wants to tell us about.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks a lot. This is Dr. Susan Kalb. We've been interviewing Dr. Stephen Ross. Please join us next week.